Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
This is a big question.
It's a hard question.
Yeah.
That's a crazy one for your 50th.
Yeah, I had to go big for my 50th.
Milestone, everybody. My 50th episode starts in just a second with a big question for the riders this week. First, a quick ask to anyone who still hasn't signed up for Lyft yet. I would really appreciate it if you signed up for Lyft using my promo code, BackseatRider, all one word. That is good for $50 in free ride credit and also helps me keep this podcast going. Now, that said, Lyft is not a sponsor. Mine has nothing to do with the conversations you're about to hear in this episode. And thank you to everybody who has done this already. Again, the code is BackseatRider, all one word, for new users of the Lyft app.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
I just was like exhausted and frustrated, and I just remember feeling done.
But then it kind of like hit hard. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing with my life right now?
I was woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning to my partner Andrew on the phone.
To him, it was probably just a second setback, and to me, it changed my life.
Changed your life. You will find out how in this episode, along with similar stories from four other real Lyft passengers about single days in the history of their lives that changed them forever. Welcome, everybody, to this 50th episode of Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive Lyft and whoever ends up in the backseat of my car becomes the cast of this show. And real quick, before we get started, I just want to thank everybody who has been listening, especially the people who have been with me since the very beginning, October of last year. And I really wanted a big question for my 50th episode. And so a couple weeks ago, I turned to Backseat Rider listeners on Facebook and Twitter for suggestions. And I got about 100 questions and topics to choose from. A lot of them were good, but one of them stood out to me. And it came from Danielle out in Los Angeles, who wrote this. She wrote, "With 9/11 coming up, you could ask people about an extremely significant moment in their life and if they remember the exact details of where they were that day, what they were doing, how they felt in the moment, and how that moment impacted their life, for better or worse." I love Danielle's question, but it was a little on the long side, so I took it and I just boiled it down to its most basic form. Can you tell me about a day that changed your life?
September 24th, 2011.
You actually have a date.
I have a date.
This woman is 28 years old, and when I picked her up that day in the Old Town neighborhood, she was carrying a bunch of art supplies with her. That day, she needed a ride up to a suburban art center where she teaches bookbinding and printmaking. Now, of all the riders that I asked this question over the last couple weeks, she was the only one who answered with an exact date.
What happened on September 24th, 2011?
I was woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning to my partner Andrew on the phone. I was in Des Moines visiting my parents, Des Moines, Iowa. And he called me and he said that our house was on fire. And I kind of didn't believe. I was like half awake and I didn't really believe him. I was like, okay, that's really funny. He was like, no, the house is on fire. You have to come home right now.
After that phone call, she got in the car with her parents and they drove as fast as they could to Iowa City. That was where she was in school. She was finishing up her degree in art. And when they pulled up to the apartment, police had blocked off the street and she could see her building on fire.
They just got everybody out. They were like, listen, we think we've got it under control. Just come outside and you'll probably be back in your beds in like an hour. So no one grabbed anything.
That hour came and went, and then another hour, then another. So pretty soon it became apparent that she and her partner had lost everything, including their cat named Warhol.
I've just felt this, like, immense shift within myself.
No people died, thankfully, but my passenger lost something else major. All of her artwork for her final senior thesis project that she put hundreds of hours of work into.
I had about 2 weeks where I was, like, you know, sleeping a lot and just, like, really depressed.
But once those 2 weeks were up and she'd gotten her grieving under control, she had a light bulb moment. Turns out there was something to be saved from the wreckage.
Went back to the site of the fire, and I found bricks. I collected dirt and, like, soot and ash, and I made inks out of those.
Plus, her thesis work hadn't actually burned. It was just ruined by all the water from the firefight. So instead of just throwing it out...
Yeah, so I took all of my damaged portfolios out of the house, and I'm a paper maker and a printmaker. So I took all of my old prints, and I repulped them and made new paper out of them.
Brand new paper made directly from her ruined artwork. A perfect complement to the pigments that she made from the used bricks, the soot, and the ash from that lost building.
So I was able to use those pigments to print those images onto paper that I made that was my old work from the fire.
Using the pigments, she reprinted some of the photos that she got back from her insurance company, which depicted the damage that happened that day.
I became more concerned with the materials that I was using and the meanings that they hold, sort of innately on their own. But also working through that work, having to, like, handle my old work as it was, like, damaged in the fire, and looking at these insurance photos and sort of having to confront that daily kind of disarmed the power that it had over my life at the time.
My passenger told me that this tragic event for her and her partner actually wound up cueing something a lot deeper within her in terms of creativity.
I think in that process, I was like, this is better than what I was doing, you know, a couple months ago before.
The project she created responding to the fire led to not only a high grade on her thesis, but career momentum that she still has to this day.
I really think if I had continued to make the work that I was making previous to the fire, that I don't think it was good enough to get me into an MFA program.
That's a Master of Fine Arts program, which she finished here in Chicago.
So why do you think that your work was stronger post-fire than pre?
I think I was just taking a closer look at why it's important to me to make art. Before, it was something I was good at and I couldn't execute, and I really liked doing it. But I hadn't really uncovered why I'm a maker and why my brain processes information in that way. I have, you know, a big art exhibition coming up in December. I'm in an artist residency. So, like, all of these things, if that day hadn't happened, I don't think I would be here doing all those things. And all those things have turned into, like, it's me living this life that I really love living.
Can you tell me about a day that changed your life? Here's a young couple visiting from Los Angeles.
Obviously the day you met me.
Don't flatter yourself.
The day you met me, that's number one.
Let's tell them number two. Don't flatter yourself.
They're both in their early 20s, and they're both big sports fans. More specifically, big Dodgers fans. But for the woman, it isn't the players that she has idolized for most of her life. Instead, it was the voice of the Dodgers.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
If you're not from LA, that's the iconic voice of retired broadcaster Vin Scully.
He's hands down my favorite person on earth. He is probably my soulmate, but we were just born in different time eras.
One day, a couple of years ago, she and her boyfriend decided to go to this sports memorabilia show where Scully was going to be speaking.
So we're walking to the car to drop off this like memorabilia that we brought off. And I always said the day I meet Vin Scully, like, I can die happy. Like, life as we know it is done. And we're walking to the car, and this car just brakes rapidly right in front of me. And I was kind of upset. I was like, oh my God, you just almost ran me over. And then I heard his voice. And, like, just chills ran through my whole body. And I'm carrying my Canon. And Jonathan's just like, what are you doing? Like, take a picture of him or something.
Out.
And I'm one of those people that I won't get starstruck or, like, can easily make conversation with anyone. And, like, I'm sitting back here telling you my whole life story. And I froze.
She froze. Didn't even say hello. Didn't even snap a picture. And yet, after coming face to face with her idol, after that day,
strangely enough, I feel like I went on just like with my head held higher. Like, it was,
if like me, you're kind of wondering, it'd be one thing if she actually talked to Vin Scully that day, but how could this little tiny encounter be a day that really changed her life? Here's how she explained it.
I've idolized him since I was like born. He's the soundtrack to my life, as cheesy as that sounds. He's because he has always been the only constant in my life. So whatever life throws at me, I know that come April through October, Vin Scully's calling baseball games. So it's almost like a safety blanket, you know? And just to be in his presence is like crazy. Like, this guy knows everything and anything about baseball, the players, their families, and he just breathes baseball. And like, baseball has been one of my favorite things growing up. It's just something about being part of something bigger than yourself.
I'll tell you this. I just put in my notice, and I am delegating my responsibilities to not one, not two, but four other people.
This is the very overworked 26-year-old general manager of a renowned restaurant in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. And that was where I happened to be driving him that morning. And it's also where he routinely puts in 80-hour work weeks.
I gave my personal life a backseat for the past 3-4 years. And at first, it was a sacrifice I wanted and really needed to make because I was in a point in my life where, like, I wasn't really doing much.
He comes from a big family. Brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles. But it's his one cousin that he's always been the closest with.
We just grew up experiencing a lot of the same shit. Like, I've seen her get into fights in middle school. I've covered her up, like, when she was, like, getting in trouble. Vice versa for me. Like, she helped me come out of the closet. And, like, we just had each other's back. Like, and then when she was in the army, like, we still kept it in. Like, even when she was in South Korea for a handful of years, we still, like, kept in touch way more than when I moved out here.
Since his early 20s, my passenger says he's completely buried himself in his work at the restaurant and rarely ever came up for air. Then one day, earlier this year, he found something out about that favorite cousin.
I'm Latino like yourself, so like I grew up with a large Mexican family, very tight-knit with my cousins, honestly like my siblings, and one in particular who I actually am probably the closest to out of anyone in this world.
Brother, sister?
She's my cousin, but oh. I consider her like my sister. Like, we've been through, she's like my ride or die. Like, I've helped her. I moved out of state for her to, like, help her in her hard times. And she's done similar things like that for me. And this year, she tied the knot, and I wasn't invited.
The day he says changed his life was when he found out that he wasn't invited.
I was having brunch with my mom at Summer House Santa Monica, and she's like, oh, so are you going to go to the eloping ceremony or the wedding? And I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, her husband's moving back here to Mexico City to be with her, because she was in a long-distance relationship, so I thought, like, this wasn't that serious, because my family's from Mexico City. We have a place over there, so, like, we go back and forth often. And she's been seeing this guy for like 3 years, but she's always vented to me about him. So the fact that she's like tying the knot, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? That was, like, my initial thought. I was like, this is, like, I don't believe this. I was, like, wanting to find out, but I didn't really want to just call and say, are you really getting married? I don't want to be that guy. But then it kind of, like, hit hard. I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing with my life right now? Like, I'm not even, like, taking my family into consideration. I'm not really taking care of myself. I'm not even following my own dreams anymore. I'm, like, here working my ass off to build somebody else's dreams.
After the snub, he asked her to explain why she didn't invite him.
She's actually like, you know what, like, I just eloped, and I didn't think it was going to be a big deal, but, like, I definitely wanted special people there, and I thought you'd be too busy working, so I didn't even bother talking to you about it, and I thought you, like, have definitely moved on, and I didn't really think you wanted me as a big part of your life anymore.
That's what she said to you?
Yeah.
The whole thing stung, but at the same time, it was a light bulb moment.
I, like, at first I was very angry, and I was like, how, like, why? Like, I know we, like, shifted, but I didn't think it was that serious, and then just made me realize that, like, these past couple of years, like, my life has just been dedicated to work. And it's not a bad thing necessarily, but I think everything has its balance, and it's just a matter of finding that balance amongst yourself and where you are. And my stepbrother just got engaged, and I haven't even, like, celebrated his engagement. Like, a couple, like, I think we all reach a point in our life where, like, all our friends are, like, moving on with their lives, they're getting married, they're getting their dream job, so on and so forth. And I think I am too, don't get me wrong. I don't feel, like, stagnant in any way, shape, or form. But it was, like, right now I definitely, like, am learning what I truly want with it if I want to continue working 80 hours a week. And especially for an industry that I didn't even necessarily finish school for.
Recently, he made the decision to quit his job at the restaurant and find something else that'll give him that life balance that he's looking for.
Yeah, it's just hustle bustle, and everyone wants to be like, oh, everyone wants to get the money. Everyone wants to make that business deal. Everyone wants to, like, follow their dreams. But at the same time, you still have to, like, do that while you're still nurturing the relationships that you have.
That guy wasn't the only passenger I drove whose stressful job led to a life-changing day.
Like, I'm an ER nurse. I had a really bad shift, and I decided to move to Alaska.
And just so you know, that wasn't just a figure of speech. She actually did move to Alaska. And we'll get the story of what happened when she got to Alaska in just a moment. But first, I need to pause really quickly to tell you about one of the sponsors that is making it possible for me to bring you Backseat Rider for free each week. And that is TrueCar, which I would highly recommend if you're in the market for a new or a used car right now. A lot of people don't realize you can use TrueCar to buy a used car. It's not just for new cars. Same exact benefits, though. The service lets you see what other people paid for the same car that you are looking for. That way, you go into the dealership with confidence. You don't have to worry that you're going to get taken advantage of or overpay for the car. You're going to see what other people wound up paying for that vehicle, so you have all the information that you need. Plus, get this, TrueCar users wind up saving on average $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. Or go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/mysurvey. Or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
With a question like, can you tell me about a day that changed your life? Most of my passengers, understandably, had to take some time to think. But not this next passenger.
When I was 6 years old, this is one of my first memories ever.
She's about to turn 21, journalism student at a local college. And that day, she needed a ride downtown to actually interview for a journalism internship.
I was visiting my family in Tennessee with my mom, and we go up to Bald River Falls.
That's in southeast Tennessee, in the Cherokee National Forest. Her story takes place on Christmas Eve, 2002.
We started doing a hike, and I was the only one with reason. I said, we need to turn around. Sun is setting and you're taking us off trail to look for bear scat without a weapon. And they were like, no, we're fine. We're going to continue. And me, being a six-year-old, decided, well, if we're going down this path, I'm going to take off my coat and leave it where we started so that we can find our way back. So I'm walking in the middle of winter in off trail in Bald River Falls and trying to find bear scat. So we're walking along and we realize it's dark out. We're completely lost. Can't find our way back. I'm without a coat. And my cousin, who was also six, about to be seven, was running because he got scared and hit his head on a low leaning branch and ended up getting a pretty severe concussion, but we didn't know at the time. So we wind up finally on the wrong side of the waterfall. So my mom and one of my older cousins crosses. And as they're doing that, I'm coming down the hill towards the water, and I accidentally step on a water moccasin.
A water moccasin being a poisonous, often aggressive snake that likes to hang out near rivers.
So it starts chasing me to the water, and one of my other cousins ends up stepping on its tail and killing it, luckily, before it bites me. So then we're stranded there. I'm sitting with one of my older cousins and then the one with the concussion and myself on the wrong side of the river. And my mom and my other cousin finally get past, walk a mile down the road, call from a bar and get search and rescue to come rescue us. And we arrived back at my aunt's house on Christmas Day and sat in a warm bath for 5 hours.
My gosh. Whose idea was it to keep going even when the sun was going down?
All of the adults. Yeah. The kids were like, maybe we should turn around. And I was very adamant that I did not want to continue, but I wasn't going to be the only one staying behind.
How did it wind up changing your life?
Made me really cocky. I learned to trust my instincts over what other people are telling me is okay. And I just kind of became very stubborn at that moment in time. Stopped listening to my parents or anyone else who told me what to do. And it stuck with me.
So this was kind of the first instance where you're like, wait, I can rely on myself and my own judgment.
Exactly. And it might actually be better than someone who's been here for a while. My mom continually proves that I am a better source of reason than she is. Like, one time we were in Africa riding a horse in the bush, and she just decides to, like, ride off by herself while everyone else is swimming with their horse. Because she's like, oh, I have a bad back, so I'll just ride it around. And we can't find her for an hour. She's just lost in the bush by herself. There are lions. There's everything else out there. And she decided to ride a horse out by herself.
Do you consider yourself a person of pretty sound judgment?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm pretty regularly trying to push my judgment towards others. Like, no, you need to listen. I'm the voice of reason here. And doesn't always go over well.
I drove another woman, who's 28 years old, whose life-changing day also involved an adventure. But this one was voluntary.
Like, I'm an ER nurse. I had a really bad shift, and I decided to move to Alaska.
The bad shift that led to that decision was an overnight shift. She had worked 12 hours that night, from 7 p.m. to 7 in the morning.
I just remember coming home and being really tired, and it was just like, I think it was a lot of, like, a whole lot of stuff that accumulated into it. You know, working night shift, it's, like, not good for your health. You don't sleep. It's, they actually die younger, people who work the third shift. And I just was, like, exhausted and frustrated. And I just remember feeling done. And I didn't want to leave nursing. And that was kind of like heartbreaking, you know, because you put so much time into going to school and studying, and you put so much effort into your patience and, like, you know, trying to be the best you can be and coming every day with a good attitude. And you just, like, feel kind of, like, broken and done. And I knew if I didn't leave that I would end up leaving nursing.
She loved nursing. She still loves nursing. It's her passion. She still works as a nurse. But she says that working where she did here in Chicago, she and the other staff members took a stunning amount of abuse, verbal abuse, from patients and their family members.
I don't even use those words. A lot of the C word, a lot of the B word. Sometimes people are real creative. You know, and I think my favorite one I've ever called is Jolly Rancher Ho, which I still don't know what that means, but I'm just going to take it as a compliment, because how else would you take it? I even, like, tried an Urban Dictionary that one. So I was like, what does that mean?
She explained to me that a lot of this abuse stemmed from the hospital's triage system, which basically prioritizes the patients based on their level of emergency. So who gets in to get treated first comes down to the severity of their injuries.
And that's really hard to explain to people, because it's hard to tell people you don't want to be like you're not important, but you want to say, like, someone's not breathing. And that's, like, a hard, like, you know, and so it takes up the doctor's resources. It takes up the nurse's resources. It takes up everyone's resources, the pharmacist, like, the transport, if you go, like, all the way down. And it's hard to tell someone, like, I know your foot hurts, but, it, like, you have pulses. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, it's not an emergency. And sometimes people do come in for really funny things, like they're just, like, fingers are itchy and you're like, I don't, you're like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not an allergic reaction. It's just, but a lot of times with that, there's some type of, like, social mental health issue going on.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so the hardest part is when you're trying to explain to someone and you're taking care of someone in that high pressure situation where you just came off of doing compressions, or you just, you know, you just, like, had to get an IV and a really sick baby and it was stressful because they're tiny. And then you have to go back and say, like, oh, you know, and they're like, I'm sorry you're waiting. And then they start, like, screaming at you and getting real, like, verbally abusive. And it's, like, it's hard to be, like, you know, it's not that you're not important. It's just that I don't, you almost don't have time for them. And that sounds even worse.
But in a crowded ER, that's reality. The person with two gunshot wounds gets priority over the guy with itchy fingers.
You could say, like, you know, don't talk to me that way, and they'll snap out of it. And other times that just really gets them going. But I don't know. It always confuses me, and we joke about it. Like, you can't walk into Home Depot and get frustrated that, like, they can't find, like, the screw size you want instantly and start talking to them that way and freaking out or threatening to, like, find their car and kill them. And you're like, sir, like, you know, your ankle hurts. Like, we've x-rayed, you know what I mean? Like, we've done things, and it's like, we'll get you back as soon as we can, but this isn't worth you, like, threatening my children, you know?
Did that happen to you?
That happens all the time, yeah.
What's an example of something that a patient has said to you where you were like, whoa?
I mean, if he dies, you die. But that's more of a high-pressure situation. And that's, like, that's where you have someone, you know, who's actually really ill and you're doing everything you can and a family member doesn't know how to cope with it. But that's probably, like, the most intimidating thing someone said to me, because at the same time you want to, like, respect what they need, but you're trying to, but they're impeding what you need to do to help their loved one. And but, like, you know, you don't want to, like, but you have to get security involved, you know.
That all took a toll on her attitude, and she says she could actually feel herself becoming that impatient, unpleasant person that some of her patients accused her of being. So 2 years ago in July, that was the day she reached a breaking point.
Like, I had a day where the coworkers were just not working well, and no matter how hard you tried to help people, they just, like, were calling you, like, awful names, and just, you know, I was just like, oh, why am I doing this? And I wanted to go work somewhere, like, more rural.
She'd been fantasizing about just up and moving to perhaps the most rural place you can go in the United States, which would be the state of Alaska.
So I, like, called up an agency, said I want to move, and then 2 weeks later they had a job offer. And
she drove all the way there, then took a boat to the island where her new hospital was located. And this was a hospital so remote that those demanding patients with minor problems, they don't even bother showing up. People who come to that ER
truly need to be there.
Like I said, they'd have a house fire on a different island, and they wouldn't get there for days if the weather was bad, or the Coast Guard would have to go in, and it's crazy to think about, like, burning yourself and, you know, how much pain, like, that's just the best example I have, and how much pain comes with, like, burning yourself and, like, calling a hospital being like, I'm on my way tomorrow.
She loved the new atmosphere and also wound up falling in love almost immediately.
He was the first person I met when I got off the boat, and I spent, like, every day with him since then.
He is also on the nursing staff at that hospital in Alaska, and this past December, they got engaged.
You know, he's going to be my partner now for the rest of my life. And, I mean, it's crazy if you think about it. Like, I always joke with him that with his personality, you know, he was, like, waiting. He's a very quiet, patient person, and I'm a lot more, get up and go, or he was waiting for me, and I went looking for him. Yeah, he was just, he was there, and I hung out with him, and so friendly, and, you know, his family was so welcoming, and they invited me to all the stuff they did, and probably from the day I met him to now, with an exception of a couple times, like, I was out of town, I live and I work with the guy now, like, I spend all my time with him, and I'm very blessed and very happy.
I want to thank all of my passengers for sharing their life-changing days with me this week. And I also want to once again thank Danielle from LA for her topic suggestion for this 50th episode of Backseat Rider. Also, if you want to take a look at that one passenger's art project that emerged from that fire in Iowa, it's really cool to see. And I have included a link to it in the show notes. All right, that is going to do it for me for this week. Two really quick reminders before I go. First, I would love it if you joined up with us in the Backseat Rider community on Facebook to talk about this episode, share your own life-changing day with other listeners if you care to. I'm going to be sharing my story there. And if you want to find it, just search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider, request to join the group, and a moderator will approve you. And also, one last time, please consider signing up for Lyft using my promo code. Again, it's Backseat Rider, all one word. It's $50 worth of free ride credit for you. Also helps me out a lot. And again, all the links you need are in the show notes for your convenience. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin and produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. Also, thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, all new Podcast One app, and of course, you could subscribe on Apple Podcasts.